Hi there. Okay. Welcome to the after lunch panel on the gifts of CEA How. I'm here with three amazing CEA How members. We've got Ginger from Phoenix, Judy S. from New Mexico, and James from beautiful Los Angeles, California. And let's start with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, I'm Leah, compulsive eater, by the way. I'm really glad you're all here. And the first person who will be speaking on our panel topic of the gifts of CEA How is Ginger. She did come in from Arizona, and she has been in CEA How since, she's been in food recovery since 1989, and is an active intergroup rep on the phone bridge and a secretary at one of her local meetings, and is here to share her recovery with you today.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi. Okay, first let me get Hi, I'm Ginger, and I am a compulsive eater, and so grateful to be here today. Sitting up here, I thought, oh, where are my peeps from Arizona? And then, I looked out and I said, I don't need peeps from Arizona because every one of you are my peeps. You all share my disease of compulsive eating. So thank you for being here. Give yourselves a hand. Okay, so my name is Ginger, and I have been a compulsive eater for many, many years of my life. I came into our mother program. I thought it was our sister program, but I found out last night it was our mother program in 1989. I was going to school. I was 34 years old. I had children, and I wanted to lose a little bit of weight so that when I started in my second career, I would look like a professional, not an overweight housewife, which is what I was. And that was okay because that's, you know, we don't regret our past. At any rate, so I went into the rooms, and it was a hall room, and they told me what to do. And I thought, they can do that, but I'm not going to do that because I'm too busy. I'm going to school full time. I have young children. I can't go to three meetings a week. Look at these people are friendly with each other. Do they not have a life? Don't they have real friends? I was so judgmental and mixed up. But at any rate, I had abstinence. I released 50 pounds in and out of the rooms for years and years and years. Because of all my years in recovery, I, through the grace of God, did not put on a lot of weight. But my mother, God rest her soul, who really supported my abstinence and the last week of her life said, Ginger, I am so proud of you for keeping your weight off. You have done so well. She would have us over for dinner, and you know how much grandmothers love their children? Grandchildren? Yeah. She would say to my husband and my children, wait till your mom gets her food, and then you can have it. You know, so she really supported me and loved me immensely, but for some reason when she died, I decided to pick up. And for 3 years, I couldn't get my abstinence back. And my son was getting married, and I had a dress that I was going to wear. And when I bought it, it was in, like, December 28th, and I thought, well, January 1st. You know, that'll be when I lose my weight. And at the middle of February, I put the dress on, and I looked like a sausage in it. And I thought, okay. And a friend of mine told me about CEA How. So I thought, okay, 10 pounds. I just need to lose 10 pounds. I'm going to go try this program, 10 pounds. Well, I went to a live meeting, and I got a sponsor the first night, and I was on a phone bridge meeting, and I heard something that I had heard so many times before, but it's like it finally made sense, and that was that if... from the CEA How concept where it says our tools, tradition, steps are not suggested, they are required. It was finally like a light went off in my brain, and I realized I'm not unique anymore. And I could no longer be judgmental or selective about how I did the program. I had to do it all, and that was such a gift. And that is the topic of our lunch, whatever this is the gifts of the program. So since coming in to CEA How, I now relish going to meetings. I love the bridge meetings. They rock so royally because You know, you can do it any time of day or night. And there are people who are telling their real stories out there, and as there are in the rooms, too. But the whole idea that there is recovery in so many different ways. And by surrendering and saying, I'm not unique anymore, I'm not judgmental anymore. Because when I was unique, I would listen to what the people were saying in the rooms, and I was totally either better than them or worse than them. You know, you eat your food that way, you do this, and it was a constant battle in my head. And so one of the gifts I have from surrendering to this program is I have serenity and peace, and I don't have to feel less than or better than. We are all equal in this program. And I've had several sponsors just because, you know, that's how life has gone for me in this program. And my current sponsor is an angel, a gift from God. There's no doubt about it. And what she has taught me is how to put away the hammer. Because one of the things that I was really, really good at doing was beating myself up. Because if I would put myself down first, then you couldn't. You know, and it wouldn't, I don't know if it wouldn't hurt as much if I did it myself, if I set myself out that I was not as good as. But, oh my God, I was one of my worst critics, and this is who I live with, myself. And so all those negative messages that I was giving myself, she said, put it away, put the hammer away. And then if it was really bad, and she'd say, put the tool bag away too. You know, and it was, thank you, God. And look around you right now. Look at the gifts that we have sitting next to ourselves. You know, we are so blessed to have each other in this program of recovery because we understand what it's like to be a compulsive eater. You know, last night our wonderful speaker talked about having Alzheimer's disease. I thought she said Alzheimer's. And then, you know, there's a similarity between Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's. And I don't want either. I want to be an old-timer. Right now, I have 1 year, 5 months, and about 4 or 5 days of back-to-back abstinence. And that is a gift. You know, that is a gift. I do not have to eat compulsively ever again. It doesn't matter what happens. Life is not perfect because I'm abstinent. Life is life. But what this program has taught me is that whatever happens, it's going to pass. And if I pick up, it's going to be worse. I mean, that's a guarantee. Because when I am eating compulsively, that's all I think of. I'm not a loving wife. I'm an educator. I'm not a good educator when I'm eating because I'm thinking about when I can get that next bite. I'm a better mother. My daughter-in-law, this is one of the gifts I've gotten. My daughter-in-law lives in another state, and I would call her or text her, and she wouldn't return, you know, she wouldn't even acknowledge that I tried to communicate with her. And I don't know about you, but I thought it was all because of me. You know, what did I do? She doesn't like me. I'm the wicked mother-in-law. I'm sure I offended her somehow. Well, I was talking to my sponsor, and I said we were going to visit, and I just kind of said, I'm just going to pray and turn it over to God. So I'm with her mother and her, and she's trying to get a hold of my son, and he's not answering his phone. And she's going, oh, I just hate it when Jeff doesn't answer his phone. And her mother looked at her and said, oh, Justine, honey, how do you think I feel? And I said, yeah. And I went, wait, Michelle, she doesn't call you back? She doesn't answer your text? And she said, no. And I said, oh, my God, I had to go to counseling because I thought my daughter-in-law didn't like me. And she goes, oh, Ginger, that's not true. And I said, okay, it's a little embellishment. You know, but what a gift, because now I know that she doesn't hate me when she doesn't answer my text. She just doesn't like to communicate. And that's a gift of the program. Do you see how that is a gift of the program? Because if I would have gone at her in any other way, if I would have been in the food, oh, my God, who knows what would have come out of my mouth, you know? And so there's, you know, we have a multitude of gifts that we get every single day. And, you know, the freedom from negative thinking, the freedom from bondage, that I am not tied down to the food. I am not tied down to the negative thoughts. And I have a way to deal with all of my problems. I have the 10th step inventory that I can take any time I say anything. You know, I have a sponsor that I can share my most intimate thoughts with. I can pick up the phone. I can call people. People I don't even know. Hi, this is Ginger. I'm a compulsive eater. You know, and people will talk to me and they will listen to me. And if they're busy, they'll be honest. But, you know, I don't take it personally, but I feel so loved and nurtured. And I feel so freaking honest, honored to be sitting up here looking at all of you, because you all rock. There's no doubt about it. You know, we are all facing our disease today, and we are all free from the bondage of compulsive eating today, and that is such a beautiful gift. And so with that, I'd like to pass and thank you for letting me be here.
You know, in this introduction, I was supposed to say why I got to choose the people who are speaking today, which was such a privilege, and I was asked to say why I chose them. One of the things that I was looking at, we have so many amazing speakers here in Los Angeles who a lot of us have gotten the opportunity to hear, and we're so blessed. And I work my program in person, and I also avail myself of the phone bridge. It's such a gift, and I was hoping to find people from the amazing phone bridge with their recovery to share for you. So in addition to Ginger, we have the lovely Judy S. from New Mexico, who just has so much recovery to share and I know does service a lot on the phone bridge level and is here to share with you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Judy S. I'm from Glenwood, New Mexico. And I And I'm a compulsive eater in recovery. And I just have to look at how many faces of God there are in the room today. I came into a 12-step program through another program. And after listening to many of the people share, I thought, gosh, maybe my food is an addiction. And so I went to the mother program for a year, and I lost my weight, and that was great, and then I moved away. And so it took 8 years for me to rediscover my disease. And so then I went to our sister program. And I had 6 years of abstinence there, and then I moved again. And I moved to a really small town. We only have about 350 people in our town. No fast food, no stoplights, no meetings. There are a few of the other 12-step meetings, like an hour this direction, an hour that direction. And it took me another 8 years. To fall on my face. And I called my old sponsor for my sister program and went back to my food plan, was able to lose my weight, but I had absolutely no support. I tried to listen to some of the speakers on the internet. And then in April of 07, my old sponsor called and said, I just found CHOW. And I said, what's that? And she told me, and then she said that they have bridge meetings. And it felt like some kind of a connection string came out of, you know, midair and just sort of hooked me up to the support that I need so badly to grow and to stay abstinent and to work on the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of this program. My threshold is 40 pounds. but it has, the numbers have nothing to do with the obsession. You know, I know what it's like to not want to take my body with me. And if I could figure out a way to go outside, do what I needed to do, and leave my body at home, I probably wouldn't be here today. It doesn't quite work that way. I have done service on the phone bridge. I'm a delegate this year for the very first time for Area 2, which is a big area. And I've been here as a support, part of the support team for the conference for the last 3 years. And so I've just gotten to meet so many people. And I think besides the gift of abstinence, the gift of maintenance, the gift to know that I can live in my body today, the biggest gift is in the spirituality realm for me. I've gone to several retreats, and I have to say, and I can feel it already happening now, but I can say at the end of the retreat, I was so in love with everybody in the room that I honestly felt like I saw the face of God. And that has happened over and over. And I would say the biggest gift that I've gotten from this program are moments of grace. In my previous life, I've had moments, but they've been far and few between that I've been able to let them in. And I had lots of hours, days, months, years of discouragement, self-disappointment, and despair, interrupted by some diet success and hopefulness, followed by despair, self-disappointment, discouragement, followed by, and it's ad infinitum, just like it says in the big book. And today, what it looks like today is that it's almost like the umbrella has been moved away. And I'm finally feeling the grace of God. I remember writing in one of our daily writings that I felt like I had a bubble around me and that God's grace just couldn't get to me. And then I had this little vision of if I allowed God to remove the bubble, I would be singing and dancing in the rain. There would be that much grace. I would have to wear hip boots because it's pouring down all the time. And it is only my opinion of me that keeps me from experiencing it. And so when I thought, I just kept saying, okay, God, I gotta have some sort of inspiration about, you know, what is the biggest gift? And it is those moments when I experience the pure light of presence. And that's what I call my higher power. And it isn't something ethereal. It's real. It's your face. It's the light behind your eyes. It's the glory of nature. I live in a small town, and depending on what airport I go to, it's either 5 hours away or 5.5 hours away. And most of the time I fly out of Phoenix because it's a little bit cheaper. Sometimes I go to Albuquerque because I can see some program friends and spend the night. And so when I left on Wednesday, there were so many black, thick, dense clouds. It was just like this huge blanket of, like, rain, just, you know, the possibility of rain, which we needed so desperately to fall on our particular high desert area. And as I drove south, and then I had to turn west. And as I turned west, the sun started to come up from behind the mountain, and I could see it in the rearview mirror. And my first thought was like, oh, cloud, sun. Oh, there's got to be a rainbow. And so I looked off to the left, and there was the beginning of a rainbow, and then it went up, and it got buried in the black clouds. And then I looked to the side, and there was the rest of the rainbow. And it's like, gasp, you know, a little gasp. And earlier in the week, I was still sitting in bed doing my calls, and I was talking to my sponsor, and the sun had come up, and there were some clouds, and so we had that amber, that just brief moment of the sun reflecting on the cloud, and my whole room turned this gorgeous amber, and it only lasted for a few seconds, and I was like, there's that moment of the grace and the pure light of the presence. As I was continued traveling to Phoenix, I got a little bit further in, and I saw a couple of young deer cross the road, and they stopped and they looked at me. And again, it's like, there it is again. A little bit further, I saw another patch of rainbow, like just sort of sticking out, and I looked to my right, and there was a double rainbow, and I just like, it just doesn't get any better than that, to be able to soak in the joy of the beauty of life, just life. And And like I said earlier, I can already feel. I mean, I've met some new people, and I see some faces that I've seen before. It's so wonderful to put names and faces together. That you hear the voices on the internet, and it's almost like you hear a voice, and you say, I know that person, and then you get to put a face with it. And I can already feel. It's like starting from the ground. It's coming up, and it's going through my body and everybody else's body, and it's like, I'm starting to fall in love with you, and I'm starting to see more of the face of God, and I don't ever want to leave you guys, and I'm so grateful for the gifts, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we have James from Los Angeles, and James came highly recommended to me, and when I called him to ask if he could do this, he said, well, I'm already doing service at the convention, and I might be working, but yes.
You got to love that, and here he is.
Hi, I'm James, the compulsive eater.
Hi, James.
And I'm one of the few of us guys here, so, and I think that's part of manhood is, you know, somebody once told me men are more vain than women, really, and it shows in this room, you know, the fact that so many women are willing to come here and be compulsive overeaters, and, you know, I have compulsive overeaters in my family who are men who, you know, it's a silly thing to them that I do this, you know, but I was given this gift, and so the gifts of C.E.A. Howe. I am a man, so I love sports, and I love stats. So I have some stats here that are. This is the biggest gift, and this is the first gift I got in the program. I'm here 460 days back. I came to this program in 1993. I got a lot of recovery, and like the old timers' disease that was spoken about last night, I left. I left for 11 years. My daughter was born, and that coincided with me leaving. And the progressive nature of our disease gave me back more than I had, given away the first time. So I've lost over 100 pounds three times in my life. The first time I lost 108 pounds. The second time I lost 120 pounds. This time I'm back 460 days. I've given away 161 pounds.
Wow.
So... I hope not to ever go back out. Because I know I will hit 400 pounds, and, you know, that will be very bad, very bad. But the gifts of the program, I think they lie primarily in those seven tools. I have mnemonics and stuff, and I have a financial background and with numbers and stuff like that. And so I broke it all down, and, like, the seven tools was alt math to me. I saw it on the thing. We read it every time, every meeting. It's that alt mass: abstinence, literature writing, telephone calls, meetings, anonymity, service, and sponsorship. It's written in that order. It spells alt mass. Everybody should remember that from this day forward. Alt mass: abstinence, literature writing, telephone calls, meetings, anonymity, service, sponsorship. And, you know, abstinence to me has to be first. It has to be first. There's a part. It says it all throughout the big book that, you know, you can't do anything without clarity. And I highly believe that. So I guard my abstinence like a mother guards their firstborn child. And I brought my my igloo container here because I don't trust anybody with my food. My food is, I put it in there, and I'm taking it out, and I'm eating it. That's me. And I've gotten to the point, you know, that I understand it's not anybody else's responsibility for me to be abstinent. Because I used to be one of those ones. I'd show up at, you know, we used to have a place called Kookaroo here. And when they closed down, I thought that was an assault on compulsive overeaters. And the drive through at El Pollo Loco gets long, and I'm like, like, you're responsible for me getting my protein and my vegetables. And, you know, I had to take responsibility. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I see the progressive nature of my disease. I have to take complete control of it. So abstinence has to be number one. Literature, my mother was a librarian, a regional administrative librarian. She was responsible, rest her soul, she passed away in 2010, and that's sort of what brought me back in here. Literature and writing, my mother was a librarian. She was responsible for Southern California region, 16 libraries. She was responsible for the books that came into the library that all of you, anybody who went to a county library could read. I did not read books as a kid growing up. I had, you know, we used to get their discarded books. I never read. I didn't like to write. I liked to watch TV. That's what I liked to do. This program gave me the gift of literature and writing. I'm required, when I speak to my sponsor, to answer a question, to talk to him, and to write out things, and to write my feelings down. And it's a gift. Like, I went my whole life without ever doing that. I never had a diary, a journal. And that's a gift. That's a gift I got here. Tool number two, telephone calls and meetings. That's the social gift. And if you're like me, you like to, you know, as soon as I turned 18, I started doing that, is get a job and I can get my own apartment and I can be alone and I can eat anything I want by myself. And my first roommate was my middle brother, and he's a normie. He was born premature at 8.8 pounds. He was premature. And for perspective, I was born 10.2 pounds. I was a compulsive overeater out of the womb. I lived with my normie brother. He would buy normie food, and I would consume his normie food. And he'd be like, why did you eat my normie food? You know? And I was like, dude, it was in the fridge. You know? So that was the relationship me and my brother had, and then he went away to Europe for 2 years after he graduated college, and then I was by myself, and I could maintain the mortgage. I had a decent job, so I paid the rent, and I filled the fridge with what I wanted, which was basically condiments, because if you're like me, you just like to order big boxes from Domino's and stuff and have that every day for every meal. So the telephone calls and the meetings got me a social life. I connected with my wife in this program. I got married in 98, so, you know, I came in 93, got married in 98, bought my first house in this program in 2000, had my first daughter in 2000, my only daughter. So, I mean, all the promises came, and that's the social gift here. This calling three people a day gets me social. Now I can communicate with people and say, hey, how you doing today? How do you feel? And I can mean it, and not just be like, hi, at work, I'm fine. I'm over here sweating, wearing a parka in 90-degree weather in Los Angeles. I'm fine. And they're looking like, sure, you're fine. All right. So you know, social, the social gift. That's a gift I've gotten this program. Anonymity. There was a question in the readings once with my sponsor who was in the room somewhere, but it had something to do with, do you gossip? You know, and it just, there was a question like that. I don't know if you guys know that from the readings. And I was like, yeah, I gossip, but I gossip because I wanted to fit in with other people. So when somebody else would start gossiping, I'd want to jump in and be like, yeah, and you know, so-and-so did such and such. And it's like I was part of them now, but we're just a group of gaggling geese, and I'm just, you know, like, that's not really social interaction. That's just getting along and being a people pleaser and, you know, and being mean and negative. But anonymity taught me, like, this is for you. Your program is yours. Mine is mine. I don't have to gossip to people about it. If somebody asks me what I have, I will share it gladly. But I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to ruin your program because I've learned in here, and like we've been sharing, look at this room. We're all the same. And if anonymity breaks down, we'll only need, you know, one-tenth this space at next year's convention because people are like, I'm not going there. That's where they out you as a weird eater person, you know. So anonymity, I had to face that I was a gossip. I was in the stitch and bitch circle kind of guy at work. Service is freedom from the bondage of self. Service. I am a secretary of two relatively small meetings, but two meetings. And when people ask me, I say yes. You know, I don't know if you've seen that Jim Carrey movie, Yes Men. There's a lot to that movie. It's silly and it's a funny movie, but I remember he comes out, he goes to this seminar, and the guy tells him, you have to say yes to every question somebody asks you. And there's a homeless guy hanging out front, and he's just waiting for a ride home. So this is the convention to go to. If you ask somebody, they have to say yes. So I'll get a ride home, you know. But then it blossoms into this wonderful life that he builds on saying yes. And I have met amazing people by saying yes. Somebody asked me, will you be the secretary? Yes. Will you come? Yes. Will you play bass tonight? Last night I played bass guitar. Yes, I played bass. You know, and it's not that, like, I don't have stuff to do. I have my wife and daughter are kind of home slightly twins. Like, you're giving those how people all your time. You know, and I have to, like, remind her and remind myself that if I wasn't giving you guys my time, I'm giving McDonald's my time. Because I could give a rat's ass about my wife and daughter when I'm in compulsive eating. And I literally have snuck out of my own house that I pay the mortgage on in the middle of the night to go to In-N-Out and get some food at a drive-thru. I've pushed my car out of the driveway so I don't wake anybody in the house. So you know what I mean? I'm a compulsive eater. I've earned a seat here. You know what I mean? Sponsorship is the last tool, and I have a minute left. Sponsorship is also part of that social growth, but sponsorship is like parenting, and I'm a parent. So having sponsees and being able to help assist them. Somebody told me a sponsor is like an extension cord to God. So the new person has a short cable. They can't reach the wall. God help me, but I can't reach the wall. You need a sponsor. A sponsor is an extension cord. So a sponsor has no other function but to connect you to God. So it's God and that other person, and that other person is like a witness. You know what I mean? Because I always had God. I'd be like, God, let's hit this drive-thru. Bam, and we hit the drive-thru. But if I tell somebody else who's my mirror, my sponsor, I'm like, dude, I'm hitting the drive-thru with God. He's like, what the fuck are you doing, James? Yeah, sorry, excuse me. You know, so sponsorship is important, and I'm sorry I cursed there. You know, I mean, that's real. That's how I am when I'm in my disease. Nobody matters except for my order. And I'm willing to go over that counter and kill the lady back there if she messes up my order. The gifts, the seven tools, they're there, they work them. They work if you work them, and I try my best today. I try my best to work them. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you all so very much. Now we're going to open it up for a question and answer period. Raise your hand to be called on, and you'll need to ask your question into the microphone.
My sponsor urged me to ask a question, and I said yes.
All right.
How do you stay motivated to continue to do your seven tools every day and have a strong program every day to all of you?
Hi, James, compulsive eater. You know, to me, a lot of these things are like little gas stations around the way, like on the way to recovery. Like I can tell now in clarity when I'm drained spiritually and emotionally, and I want to go back to my apartment by myself and eat. And so that kind of motivates me. And I'm a creature of habit too. So I go to the same meetings and I eat at the same time. I build some ritual in and try to make that ritual happen. So set some time aside. I'm not the best at making all my outreach calls, but luckily sometimes on those days when I'm not ready to go, people call me. And I'm like, oh, it counts for you? I'm accounting too. You know, so, I mean, you know, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. None of us are perfect, you know. But build it into your schedule. Build it in. Treat it like it's your child. Your abstinence and your program is your child. So, you know, I remember all the stuff I went through with my daughter in her first years. Do the same with your program. That's all I can say.
Well, actually, my sponsees inspire me to continue on, and many of their shares and many of their lists of gratitudes make me feel I've just been kissed with something special. And that keeps me going. And coming to these kind of gatherings and retreats all just continue to sort of, you know, keep the light burning.
Hi, I'm Ginger, compulsive eater. And I think what helps me is that I've gone out there, and I know what it's like to be out there. I remember that through the grace of God. I don't want to go back. I don't know if I pick up when I'll get back. And I love being where I am now. Thank you.
I'm Diana, compulsive eater. Thank you all so much for your share. It was very motivational, inspirational. I wonder if, of course, we're all CEA hell, but if you know people in your lives who do have what we have, who are not compulsive eaters. I mean, there's plenty of people we know who, like, should get a program of some sort. I'm asking because I'm new to 12 steps entirely, okay? So this is, I've got 5 months, 5.5 months fasting. And thank you. And I just, I love it. And I think, well, what are other people doing who I admire, who have sanity? They must be doing something. And I wonder if you know people, you know, whether it be their church or meditation. I think a lot of times it's people who do yoga. But
thanks for the question. I guess what I have to say is that I know this doesn't work for everybody, and there's lots of other things out there that does work. And whatever anybody else does is none of my business, and everything I do is my business, and not even then, because I turn my life over to God, and then my life becomes God's business. But I just have to keep walking and letting other people have their own walk.
Hi. I know when I first came into program, I wanted to tell everyone what I was doing, because I thought everyone would want what I had. And I was such a bore. You know, I feel sorry for anyone who had to be around me then. So today I live my program. I try to have it really be the principles of my life. And when I go to the doctor or I volunteered at a health fair and I tell people about our recovery. So with my doctor, I say, you know, if you have patients who complain, at the gym, I've talked to the trainers. I've given them my card. Say, you know, if you have clients who complain they can't stop eating. I have the answer. I'd love to share it. But I was at a meeting once, and this sweet young woman who just started the program was on the bus, and she shared that there was an overweight woman eating something that we no longer eat, and she turned around and told her about the program. And she was so proud of herself. But, you know, in reality, that's not how we attract people. You know, it's how we live. But, you know, this is such a beautiful program, and hopefully people will want what we had. What James said earlier about gossip, I too was such a gossip. And what a gift that people I meet at work who didn't know me back then, they said, "You just never talk about anyone." And it's like, thank you, God. You know, thank you, God. So maybe that will attract people. And people see you eat differently. And so then they might ask you, you know. So we live by example. Thank you.
I'll just kind of echo that. And, yeah, it's live. If you live it, it's attractive. You know what I mean? I work in a place with a lot of, you know, I work in a call center with dozens and dozens of people. And we have a break room that's full of dozens and dozens of non-abstinent items. And I come every day with my igloo, and I eat my little meal, and I sit in peace, and I communicate with people, and I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say. And then every now and then somebody pulls me aside and says, "James, what are you doing?" You know? And then I share. And then I'm honest, you know, and I have a mini meeting. And, you know, I plant a seed, and that's it. It's not my responsibility for them. It wasn't anybody's responsibility for me to come back, you know. Somebody planted a seed, and I took it because I was fertile ground. And so when they're fertile ground, they'll run with the seed. So it's just live the example. Be the example. And people will ask you. They will come to you and say, what are you doing? Like, you know. And they'll have a preconceived notion, but then you can share and open it up and explain what's going on. So.
Hi, my name is Laurel. I'm a compulsive eater. I just wanted to know what you guys have to say about, you know, one of the gifts of abstinence in this program for me has been, you know, a pretty drastic weight release. And because of that, my body's kind of flabby and jiggly. And I have never been an athletic person, an exerciser. In fact, my gut reaction to exercise is forget about it. I think about it a lot, but I just can't get around to doing it, to bringing myself to doing it. I wanted to know how you guys, if you guys incorporate exercise into your program, and if you do, what has helped you? How do you use the spiritual tools to get the willingness to do that on a regular basis?
Thank you for that question. You might not want to hear my answer. I just finished a 479 mile bike ride in 6 days, and here's what a gift is. I'm abstinent. And it was in the Midwest. Anybody here from the Midwest? Anybody know you pride yourself because you can bake anyone happy? Yeah? Well, every stop were homemade things. And guess what? I wanted my abstinent food. I didn't want that. Okay, so back to exercise. So I've exercised my whole life, but after children, I didn't have time. My mother-in-law for Hanukkah gave me a gift certificate for the Jewish Community Center, and my father-in-law took care of my child, and my mother-in-law drove me to the gym. I then became an aerobics instructor. But at any rate, see, I know I'm sort of like the nemesis of exercise, right? When I wasn't exercising a lot, I always would look out for people who wanted to exercise. So I would say to my neighbor, my friend, "Want to go for a walk?" And I found that getting up in the morning, if I do it in the morning, then it's done. So we would have, you know, we would walk, you know, start out slow. You're going to feel better. It's addictive. It's not awful. You know, it really is wonderful when you can accomplish something. And it makes you can eat more. It's true, true. Isn't that true, people who exercise? Yeah, yeah, and I love my food. So just get out and start walking.
You know, park farther. You know, when you go to the grocery store and you have your cart, one of my sponsors once told, she takes it back. I live in Phoenix, 110 degrees in the afternoon. That's not even hot. Do you take the cart back to the store? Yes, because you can. You know, you're not going to leave it in the car, in the parking lot. Take it back. Walk. Do stairs. Find a friend.
Well, I don't exercise, and I never have.
All right.
I teach a stretch class.
All right.
That I have. I have one man that's 86, and I have one that's 78, and I have another one that's 75, and the other one's young. He's still in his 60s, and occasionally a couple of women come. And the only reason I do it is because if I don't teach a class, I don't do it. I'm a massage therapist, so I'm active and move around, but exercise has never been my thing. But I do try to practice parking farther away from the store. I do push the cart back. I do little things like that. But for me to think about doing an exercise plan, it just isn't me.
James, compulsive eater. I guess I fall in the middle of these two. I don't obsess about it. You know, when I was, in high school, I played high school football. But I was, I was the high school football player. I was 325 pounds, 6'3". So I was a lineman. I was the guy, we lifted weights. We did not run the bleachers. We beat up the wide receivers, you know. We were the Bears, and they were like these gazelles, you know. So I vowed when I graduated high school, I am never going to exercise that hard ever again in my life. I've been members of gyms, but this abstinence has primarily been the abstinence that got me this 161-pound weight loss. I have to disclose, for the last maybe 6 or 7 months, I'm pretty vegetarian. But it's all on the food plan. So it's one cup of the legumes, you know, 2 or 3 cups of the vegetables, depending on the meal. I'm on maintenance, too, so I get a little more now. And, you know, when you're eating non-meat, it's a lot more nutrition dense, but calorically smaller. So the last probably 75, 80 pounds I lost is probably because I'm eating a lot of vegetables. And, you know, I went on a trip to Prague. I stayed abstinent in Prague, Eastern Europe, Czech Republic. So it can be done anywhere, yeah. Believe me. And I was eating meat again just for that period. And a little weight came on because it was a little more calorically dense, even though I weighed it. It was 4 ounces, and, you know. So, you know, I would say for me, in terms of weight loss and stuff, and you mentioned, like, the flabby skin, I have a little of it, you know. But, you know, take it up. No. But I had this trainer once, and that second time I lost weight, and he talked about, you know, visualize what you want to be. And, you know, it sounds kind of, you know, out there, but if you start visualizing what you see yourself as, your body starts to become that, you know. And now, like, I'll do, like, 50 push-ups before I jump in the shower. And it's because I want to impress myself. Like, how many can I do today? I'm like, I'm on the bathroom floor, and the shower's running, and I'm about to jump in the shower. You know what I mean? But it's something about when weight is gone away, you want to move. You know, I have a folding bike that I bought that I saw in Europe. I saw these folding bikes that these guys take off the train, and they're in a suit. Like, that's how they don't drive SUVs like we do, you know. They move. And so I bought this little folding bike, and so now I'm like, oh, I don't care if there's no parking. I will park 3 blocks away and jump on my folding bike, which fits in the trunk. It unfolds to a full-size bike, and I can go anywhere. So I feel like I was sharing at a meeting once, I feel like a superhero. Do you guys remember Spider-Man when he first got bitten and he woke up after, like, he had a fever? But then, like, his glasses were blurry when he put them on, but he took them off and he could see clearly? that's how this abstinence has been for me. Like, I literally can do a pull-up. I never in my life, I'm 42 years old, I could not do a pull-up. I can bust out, like, five of them, like, you know, and I'm like, Superman.
All right, thank you.
But I didn't get much stronger. It's the abstinence has made me, you know, a lighter person, and so.
All right, that's all the time we've got. Okay, thank you guys so, so much. And thanks, everybody, for being here.